This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Mr. Glassborough. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, not too bad. How are you, Chris?
I'm all right, thanks. I very specifically called you something different there because I actually had gone back and listened to quite a few of the podcasts over the last few weeks, and I say exactly the same thing, almost to the letter, almost to the intonation, so that I've got to vary it a little bit today and say, do something different. So no talking about the weather. Let's talk about our guest, first of all, and he can tell us what beer he's drinking, because officially it is his holiday and he is calling or joining us on this discussion during a holiday. So George Crump, good to talk to you again, George.
Hey, Chris, Martin, great to see you guys. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, not bad. It was our holiday last week, so we had ours last week. Although we did record, Martin, didn't we? We did record.
Dedication.
Yep. How's your weather, George? Let's not talk about the UK weather. What's your weather like?
Well, as you guys know, I'm based in Texas, so it's been in the hundreds in Fahrenheit over most of the August, and then we finally had a break, and it got it's a chilly 90 degrees now. So. We're enjoying it.
And I don't even know what that is in real money. That's probably about 30, I guess.
It's 30-odd, isn't it?
Yeah, that's hot enough, hot enough for anybody. And I'm guessing when they do the weather forecast, they can do it like Steve Martin used to do on LA Story, where he'd just go, sun, with all the sun stickers, pre-record it until he got caught out by the thunderstorm. Anyway, enough of that. Let's discuss what we're actually here to talk about, and that's the idea of transparency in storage pricing. Now, the reason you're here, George, is because, first of all, we know that you've taken a very interesting stance in the way that you're displaying your pricing on your website. But really, I think Martin and I have talked on and off about the pricing thing recently. You know, we're not going to give away any confidences, but, you know, just talked about different companies. It's a really interesting subject because there's zero transparency in it, I think, George.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm surprised how difficult it is, even for us to try to get pricing if we're just trying to compare, but also, you know, for a customer. And of course, I think, you know, Martin, you're sort of on the front lines there. The price can change radically from the beginning of the quarter to the end of the quarter. And that, to us anyways, that just didn't make sense.
Oh, no, it will change. And I think the first thing is, if anybody's ever listened or who's listened to this, who's ever tried to get the actual list price of any storage device, it's impossible. To go and find the published price lists from any of the big vendors is impossible. Now, in theory, they should publish them and you should be able to find them. But your Google foo is going to be much better than mine, and I'm pretty good at this, but you just can't even find a list price to start with. So you stand no chance of doing, at least even doing a list price comparison. You've got to go through the quoting process even before you can get a price.
Well, that's just mad, isn't it? Let me just ask you a quick question then. One of the things that it dawned on me is as to whether these prices are ever even real in the first place. So, and the reason I say that is, imagine when you go and stay at a hotel, like a hotel in New York, on the back of the door, there's a room rate that's like four times what you've just paid. And you're looking and go, nobody would pay that for this room. Why is that room rate quoted? And I don't even know what it's there for. It must be there legally, but I don't know why it's so high. And I wonder whether list prices are, you know, similar in that sense, that they're just made up.
I think that's a whole case in the IT industry, full stop. It's not just storage. I mean, certainly any IT hardware, nobody pays list. Well, the man in the street may pay list, but no company will ever pay list. When we start talking about across the board, for certainly in the storage world, where you're talking 70, 80, I've seen companies go as high as 95% discount on list. It just shows you, because most of these companies legally can't sell at a loss because they're getting all kinds of trouble with cross subsidizing, certainly if they're large. If your discount rates you're offering to some of your large customers are 95%, I mean, oh God, your margins must be scary to what you're actually selling to some of the smaller companies.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When we were starting the whole true price journey, and I got to tell you, I can't believe how hard of a process that was. But one of the things that we really kind of struggled with a little bit was, what do we set list price? Because we had a good feel for what we thought was a fair and reasonable, what we now call street price or true price. Then we were struggling with, okay, what should we set list price at? And what kept coming back to me was, well, nobody will ever pay it though. And I, so I finally just said, okay, if nobody's going to pay it, can we just not have it? Why waste the bits and bytes on the website to chew that up? Let's just get rid of it and say, this is what are you going to pay? I mean, you could, I guess, essentially call our true price a list price, but then you're kind of doing it a disservice.
Okay. Maybe we should just put list price aside then and just say it is a bit of a lot of nonsense. It doesn't really exist. Nobody really does do that. So, but that aside, there's still huge variation in pricing. So, as you said, George, different times of the purchasing cycle, shall we call it, you can get a good deal, or at other times you won't get a good deal. Now, you know better than all of us, Martin, what drives that, and I think I know what drives it too.
Well, it's end of year, end of quarter. You look at your vendor's year, and you work out when the best times to buy. It's often quite handy if it aligns with your end of year and you're getting to the end of year and people have got budgets to use up, CapEx budgets, which they can't roll over. It's a virtuous circle. You've got cash, the vendor's desperate to sell you stuff. You can sometimes get two, even three times as much as you might have done if you'd actually bought it halfway through the year. But I will say to anybody who's listening to this, if you get an end of year quote and you think that won't be honoured next quarter, I think you're sadly mistaken. I have never seen a vendor say, well, that was only valid this quarter, because that gives the sales guy or sales girl the next quarter, even if that comes in that following quarter, it will give them what they like to call a bluebird, something which wasn't expected. It comes in and it kicks them off nicely on their target for next year. But they'll always honour it.
Seems a bit of a game, really, George.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny because, you know, everybody in our company was raised in the same industry that we all were. And so to have a line that you stick to all of a sudden becomes a very difficult discipline, because you're used to, you know, you're almost kind of used to behaving a certain way. And now we're saying, look, we're going to behave correctly. And, you know, we've got to stand up to that as well and be very careful with how we do that. So it's a challenge.
From my experience, I think there are vendors who will give certain people different types of discounts. So if they know that you're going to be a good customer, they might give you a bit more of a discount initially. You might be able to negotiate a good deal. Or if you're a very large company and they know you're going to spend a lot and you'll be a recurring purchase every quarter, maybe they'll give you a better deal. But I'm never quite sure about how much of a deal they really will give you in those sort of circumstances.
The more you buy, the bigger your discount generally. That's what you generally find. Whether you're a good company or easy company to deal with, I don't necessarily think that particularly drives discount levels. I mean, in some ways, the harder you are to deal with, the bigger discount level are, because you have a procurement team or a finance team who are playing hardball with the vendor. And I just think it's really interesting. We've ended up with this industry where you'll get a price from a vendor and you'll look at the price, and I'll get a price as a tech guy, as from a vendor. And sometimes I look at price and say, whew, you're going a bit deep on that. And you have phone a sales guy up and say, you sure you want to put that forward? Because you need to make sure you've got some procurement margin in. He'd be like, oh, no worries, Martin. Don't worry about it. There's procurement margin, because everybody in the chain, in a purchasing chain within a corporate, will be targeted to a certain amount on about how much money they can save. If I, as the IT manager, can negotiate the best deal, well, we don't need a procurement department. So you always have to make sure there's a little bit left in for them, maybe a little bit in for finance or the next level manager to negotiate a bit more. It's a wonderful game, Chris.
It is, isn't it, really? Because you're almost having to help out your procurement team. That seems like to go against every possible, you know, thing I should have ever thought about helping procurement. But, you know, maybe that's what we should be doing. It's a bit odd, isn't it? Because as Martin says, George, it is a bit of a game that you're playing with your vendor and within your own internal teams.
Yeah, and it's I think the challenge is, how do you break the cycle where the price is the price and it's fair and reasonable and everybody kind of agrees that it is? And I think it becomes, you know, Martin brought up a really good point that I don't think we've run into since launching True Price, was we haven't had yet a procurement person call us and say, oh, well, I've got to get a better price because I've got to make my IT guys, you know, see my value. And now I'm a little nervous, actually. So thanks, Martin. Now you have gave me something to stay up at night.
Sorry, George.
Yeah, so, no problem.
So what about just thinking about this in a bit more detail? And I was just trying to think through that, you know, the pricing structure from the vendor side, because you just talked there, Martin, about getting discount for your company. But as a vendor, you surely, as you said, you can't sell product at a loss, so you're not going to want to sell product at a loss. That's not the best sort of business model you could ever use. But obviously there's a limit to that. So when you are going to quote, there must be a minimum point that that vendor is going to say, well, this is where we've decided, this is the absolute bottom line. And I wonder, George, and this is not putting you on the spot here, but when you try and be a bit more transparent and say this is what we intend to sell it for, are you giving the game away to other people who probably look at it and go, oh, well, they can't be making any money off that, or they are making some money, but it's not going to be that much? And does that affect what your business then looks like in terms of your profit?
Well, you know, we, our whole company is really focused on software, right? So we're a software, primarily a software only company. I know obviously TruePrice has hardware in it, just so we could create bundles that people could use to compare with. It's a misuse of the term to say that software doesn't have a cost. Obviously, we've got development costs. We've got probably support costs is probably the biggest cost there. And so it's really on us to make sure we understand what we have to be able to make on that software in order to be able to have a viable business, right? But it does put a little pressure on you because we've seen people get very creative, at least at this point, because we're the guys out there showing the price. We've seen people come directly after our true price pricing already.
But that split, Martin, though, between hardware and software, I mean, at the end of the day, if you sell hardware, you have to sell some hardware that you've had to come purchase. And it's not like when Microsoft could sell a million licenses of Windows and the only cost there was reproducing the disk, or in that case, you know, just allowing somebody to do download. When you sell a hardware product, there's a physical bill of materials you've had to go and buy. So it's just not the same model between hardware and software, is it?
Well, it's not. I think as a customer, we all know the real money's in the software, but the hardware, I mean, the games which are played, if you try and get a bill of materials, I mean, I know some big companies, we don't, but I know some big companies in the past have actually pushed very hard to get a bill of materials out of hardware vendors to actually, so we can do a line by line pricing and say, well, you're charging us too much for that screw. But vendors are very loath to do that. And unless you're talking multi-million pound deals, but you're never going to get that. But software is a really interesting one, Chris. And I think this is where George is probably going to find is it's, sometimes it's a struggle to get people to see the value of software. So if you look at the software support, I mean, if you, and the pricing for software, certainly in the storage world, which is the licensing cost is generally done per terabyte. And people say, well, actually, what it's going to cost you the same to support 1 terabyte as it does support 100 terabytes. So I'll pay you for 1 terabyte. And I think that's where the challenge is for companies like George's.
Go on then, George. How are you going to deal with that
I mean, we're today anyways, definitely priced by capacity. We can't find a better model to, you know, actively, you know, make it make sense for everybody. We've looked at per core and all those different things that I don't want to get into, you know, a commercial about us, but the way our software operates per core actually works against us. So capacity is the fairest thing that we've come up with thus far. You know, there has been a couple of times where we've gotten some pushback where, well, you know, you're just software. But I think most people, to Martin's point, really are starting to understand that concept now. It might be just because everybody knows that we're software first. Those customers are more likely to be open to the idea. So our numbers might be skewed as well.
When you go and buy a car, for example, you buy a car, you buy a piece of metal, a thing, and that car never changes once you buy it, typically, not unless you're Tesla and they freak the software, but come back to that in a second. But when you buy a car, you buy what you buy, and you've owned that thing, and you have it for a certain length of time. And it's very easy to see that as a purchase of an object or an item. But when you buy software, I think there's an opportunity for a vendor, if they're very clever, to add new features to that software over time. So if you sell that software as a subscription rather than as a one-off purchase, you can then come back and add value every quarter by saying, here's the latest feature, here's the latest thing you're getting. So that sort of encourages you to pay for a subscription where you're adding value every quarter. And I think, Martin, that might have been where you were thinking of heading with the cloud discussion.
Yeah, well, I think cloud might have helped us. I mean, cloud, I mean, you're paying per month for per gig. So people are getting a better idea. And although you are paying for hardware in the cloud, I think people are almost beginning to realize they're just paying for a service. You're paying for a mix, you're paying for hardware and software, and you're not worried so much about it. So I think the software conversation will get easier. And then I think we'll get into the situation where you start talking like you do with the cloud providers. Okay, so the first 10 terabytes will cost me this. The next 40 terabytes will cost me this. And when I go over, say, 100 terabytes or a petabyte, you're going to be charging me a lot less than you were charging me per terabyte when I was only buying 10 of them. So I think we... customers are getting used to this tiered model. and less worried about the artifact, because at one point when you're buying hardware, you're buying an artifact. You're buying something which you can hug. Software, you can't go and hug software. We can go and hug a CD-ROM if you're insane, but that's your choice. But with cloud, you can't see it. It's just something there. So I think the idea of paying for something which is almost ephemeral is becoming more accepted. So I think the software-defined model still probably got a couple of years to get well and truly accepted, but it's getting better.
Yeah, I think what we shifted to a quarterly release cycle, and our goal is to put out at least 2 to 3 what we call features of significance, other than your sort of your normal updates and bug fixes and things like that. And that has helped a lot, because we have, imagine being a customer and you got an update and, one we have coming out soon, it will literally in about 25% of the use cases deliver about 30% better performance on the exact same hardware. So, using your Tesla example, Chris, imagine Tesla does an update and all of a sudden the car goes, 20 miles an hour faster and you didn't do anything. Right. So that I think the more we can have a track record of showing that, I think that helps us in any software defined company.
I think that's really important. I think that's essential almost in selling software, because if you can do that, then you can justify the subscription. Then you can justify the per terabyte cost that declines, like Martin just said. But you've got to show me what I'm getting for continuing to be a customer with you. There's got to be some value to that. And if you can show that and say, here's where your money's going, I think that's a good thing. And I would suggest that people who are looking at either SDS solutions or a model where their vendor is selling them in an SDS style solution on a subscription, they should be looking and saying, well, what is the track record of what this vendor's given me as a customer? Because if you're not giving me anything after the first purchase, the subscription model just isn't worth doing.
I was going to say, I'm wondering if there could be a space for some kind of multi-tiered subscription model. And I know it will get very complicated. But you buy your storage array with your software defined, or your software in it. And one of the key things is to have it under maintenance is you maintain that you get your bug fixes, your security fixes. That's what you want. But is there an opportunity for a model where you get a model plus where not only do you get those bug fixes, security fixes, but you get the additional features? You're not paying for them as licensed features, but you just get them turned on as they get released. I don't know. I think it probably be quite complicated for the vendor, but it might be an attractive model for some people, certainly some larger customers. Think, you know what? I know you're shifting that new feature. I'm not very interested in new features. I bought it today to do what it does. I'm not looking for increased value add.
I wonder whether a vendor would want to do that simply because that gives a customer an opportunity to say, we don't really want to pay for the full price or the full product. And you're at risk of giving away revenue just simply because you think that you should do, just because that customer might decide to take a feature or not take a feature. That could be a tricky sell, and it might be tricky to sell to the board, I think, for people like George, in that sort of position.
But we've certainly seen cases where a software... the software, you pay extra for features. So you buy a storage array, it might come back and you'll pay an extra for your replication. You may pay extra for snapshots. And then you find 2 years later that actually the vendors decided that's too hard and everybody gets snapshots. So if you're the customer who's never paid for your snapshots, you're very happy. If you're the customer who's paid for snapshots, you're not so happy because you've just wasted 2 years of money. It's an interesting conundrum for a vendor to do. How do you stop peeing off customers? Less common in the storage market, but I have seen it. I've certainly seen it in the operating system market where things have come in and out. I've seen cases where, going back in the day, Chris, I remember at one point you paid extra for X, then you didn't pay extra for X, and then you paid extra for X again.
Oh, yeah. You'd think of just a standard EMC array where... you'd buy it with the replication or the synchronous replication or BCVs or whatever, and then you'd think, oh, that box has got it. Did we buy that box with that license? Because they're not easily, or they're not transferable. So now you're moving stuff around to put the storage in the right place because the box doesn't have the license. And then all of a sudden you manage to negotiate a deal where you get everything. And then, as you said, there's always somebody who comes along and goes, but why are we paying for that? And then you're saying, but it's included. And it's like, but why do we pay for it? And I don't think you can ever please everybody, but there's a real balance there between simplicity and efficiency, I guess, that you've got to try and balance. And for a vendor like George, I mean, that's your challenge all the time, George, isn't it, looking at that?
Yeah, I think we're always going to err on the side of simplicity. I think that simple always wins in most cases. And most of the features, if you look at the features we've brought out over the last 6 months, if you enable them, not in every case, but in many cases, the customer is going to consume more capacity as a result of enabling that feature anyways. And since we're capacity based, it all sort of works its way out. So that those kind of capabilities, I think, things that, because what we're constantly being asked for is higher and higher levels of redundancy, you know, those sort of things. And anytime you increase redundancy, you're going to increase your capacity consumption.
Yeah, I'm going to completely contradict myself in that last statement, Martin, and say, on the one hand, I think simplicity is good. But on the other hand, I think you're right in terms of the cloud model, because people are starting to get used to the idea that when you buy something in a cloud model, you're paying potentially for capacity, you're paying for transactions, you're paying for bandwidth. And there's a lot more complexity to the calculation that you have to make when you're using a cloud service. So perhaps it isn't going to be as much of a big deal to people as long as they can see the cost very clearly. So, you know, if you know, put replication on this box for this number of terabytes, it's going to cost this much. And you're not buying a license that you then have underused if you can use it while you need it. If you don't, do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Chris. Comparing the cost of a cloud, so when we talk about cloud and talk about off-premises cloud with your on-premises model, is that there is an art and a deep, dark magic, because I don't actually think you can do it. I've seen lots of people try to come up with models and they never really work. But it's interesting you're talking about features there. So obviously the features you'll pay for in the cloud are based on a capacity consumption. If you want snapshots, that's absolutely fine. It's there, but you'll pay for the space you consume for a snapshot. So if you want to replicate, you're going to pay. If you're just doing a one-for-one mapping, you're going to pay twice as much for your storage. So the features are always there. You may pay a little bit extra for the replication for use of the bandwidth, depending which zones and how you're moving things around. But you kind of assume that when you're buying your storage in the cloud, you're getting all the features, but you do know that if you start consuming it, it's going to start consuming capacity, you're going to pay more for it.
Which is, I guess, what you just said, George, didn't you? Features are driving capacity, which is driving spend.
Yeah, I think the one exception in the cloud that we're seeing, because for us, the cloud is essentially almost just another instance, except like, for example, on premise, I don't know anybody that charges extra for, if they're a capacity based system, they don't charge extra for, say, flash, they do hard disk drives. But in the cloud, you absolutely do, right? You've got premium tiers that you're paying for, you've got kind of medium level tiers, and you've got all the blob and object storage tiers. So there is that. What's interesting is the software vendor has an opportunity to really be sort of a partner with the customer in that case, because they could help that customer drive down infrastructure costs, right? Because we can't control the clouds that we run in, we can't control infrastructure costs as far as what that provider provides infrastructure for. But we can help customers not use as much infrastructure to the point of even turning off software components so that we're not chewing as much CPU resources all the time.
Yeah, that's what becomes a bit more of a TCO play, doesn't it? And you have to sit down and work out the calculation. Okay, well, looking across, and it's going back to where we first started here and asking the question as to why vendors aren't very transparent. We know you publish your prices, George. You've just been told us that a number of times, called True Prices, your feature on the website. The only other vendor I've seen that's done that, certainly recently, is IBM. And that surprised me. IBM is starting to show the price of their flash system products. It was initially in the US, and it's now being done in EMEA. And I was surprised that IBM would do that, because normally they're very, very difficult to get past in terms of any sort of visibility. They're like, oh no, you know, talk to somebody before you get anything. So Martin, I mean, would you say that's a change you've seen in them, or do you think that's just...
I think it might be a one-off. I've not really seen IBM or any of the large vendors get any more transparent at the moment. Yeah, it surprises me that you've even noticed it. I hadn't noticed it myself, but then again, I haven't gone looking.
Well, I hadn't gone looking. IBM were talking to me about something else, and that's one of the things they pointed out to me.
Oh, okay.
So that's when I went looking and went, oh yeah, it's on the website. That's how I found out about it. So I think they're in a position where they're trying to work out how they get people to understand that and see that they are being transparent. So, you know, there's part of the problem too. People have probably got a very preconceived idea what a lot of vendors will be doing.
Well, we're obviously not telling customers that they're being transparent and where to look. So maybe they need to do a better job of socializing and publicizing that.
And it could be they're maybe targeting a different market there. So maybe they're putting it on the website because it's more targeted, say, SMBs that are more used to the idea of going on a website and getting a price, whereas enterprise customers maybe are used to the engagement that you would normally have.
I think I'd prefer the engagement where at least where I could go to a website and actually get a decent price or something which looks reasonable beforehand. And I would love it if I could get that and then a salesman didn't phone me up 2 days later to ask me when I was going to purchase it. But then again, I think one of the things is people get very worried and vendors get very worried. If you do that, as George alluded to earlier, it means everybody can see that. That means your rivals can see that. They can see where your pricing is. And in theory, that's very sensitive. I don't know very many vendors that it's actually that sensitive to because they've all got pet customers who will tell them.
So what's your feedback been, George? How have you seen it work for you?
So the first thing that jumps out at me is that the about 78% of the people that have gone to the point, you know, and our site's a little different because you can price and configure without filling out a form or anything. So we get a lot of people that are sort of just looking at pricing and they go away. The people that get all the way down and fill out a form that say, hey, I want to request a quote. You're essentially doing what you just said, Martin. You're literally saying, call me now. Right. And I think that's the right way to earn somebody's business, to be very honest with you, instead of dialing their phone 700 times and when they accidentally pick up. Right. Yeah. But so we see a very high percentage of enterprises, which kind of surprises me. I thought we'd see more medium sized people in there. What is interesting is we see a across the board in configurations between the different types of products that we can offer. So that's also interesting. And we've been sort of public saying, look, we want everybody to do this. I would love to get it to the point where, because we all essentially run on the same hardware anyways, we're most storage companies are software companies first. It just depends on who you get the hardware from. So let's level the playing field. If we can get it to where it's all the same, and then it just becomes whose product is better, right? And that to me should be why you pick a product, because this one's better, not because it's so much less expensive. And I would love to see it drive to that point. And I think that, you know, Azure, Google, and Amazon AWS have sort of led the way on this. And I think we could see the same thing in on-premise.
Good point. So I'm just going to sort of bring us to the end here with a little discussion about that SDS side of things in the cloud. And I tried to drag off some details and look at pricing just to see exactly what pricing really looks like. So Azure NetApp files came out, and this is really difficult to read, but 0.00202 gigabytes per hour, which I translated into a reasonable number we could understand of $1.77 dollars per gigabyte per year, which, I don't know, $1,700 a terabyte a year. Does that seem unreasonable?
Sounds a bit high.
I don't know, Martin. Does it?
Yeah.
I don't buy these days, so I don't know. Yeah. I don't know whether that's good or bad. But then you look at, say, the pure cloud block storage, you need to pay $1.94 for the virtual instances to run the environment, per hour that is, and then you're paying $1,800 a month for a 10 terabyte license. That seems way more expensive to me.
Yeah.
Because you're paying twice. You're paying once for the, you know, the software license, and you're paying for the infrastructure yourself. Mm. And those two are separate. And then I went and tried to find Dell EMC's Isilon pricing, which is, I think, what they now call PowerScale, don't they? And there's no pricing. It's available on Google Cloud, no pricing. Click on the website, clicks you back to their website for more details, no pricing. So they're obviously just deciding we're going to sell this product in an enterprise way, even though it runs on the public cloud, which is, I think, is an interesting approach too, because it's the sort of thing that if you and I were wanting to buy and we're already on the public cloud, that might actually make people think, nah, not interested.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, actually, Chris. I mean, the engagement models for buying cloud storage from the large vendors, it still falls back to a very traditional enterprise model. You kind of just want a portal where you can just click in and say, actually, well, how much is it going to cost me? Get visibility. And you have to remember that even without transparency, you may then say, actually, I'm going to buy an awful lot of this. You're going to pick up a phone and you will still have an individual negotiation and prices will still shift. Don't believe that everybody pays the same price for AWS or their Azure or their Google Cloud, because that's simply not the case. The price list you see isn't the price list which everybody pays. But it would make life a lot easier for all of us if we had this kind of portal-based pricing. So we didn't actually have to phone up sales and to engage at that level. And if it was at least within 20, 30% of what the final price would be, that would be very useful and would make my job a lot easier and a lot quicker.
And I think just to George, putting it back to you again, I don't know anything about selling. I don't know, you know, but one of the things that does strike me is you need a customer to be ready to buy. And you just said that when people fill out that form, they're effectively telling you, I'm ready to buy, or I may be ready to buy. You know, when they're clicking around on the website, or if they have to go through just to find any level of detail, they're probably not ready to buy. And it's then, and what you're getting is you're getting a customer who's much more likely to be ready to buy.
Yeah. And we'll, people that fill out that form, we know have been to our site before because they, you know, requested a white paper, or they went to a webinar or something like that. Well, that's just research. That's a guy like Martin doing his job, seeing if these guys are, you know, worth even investigating, and then kind of going down that next layer. I will say to this, Chris, though, first of all, thank you for doing all the research, because we're getting ready to come out with our marketplace product, and I need to raise my pricing, I think, based on what I saw. But Martin, I got a question for you, if I can. Would you care if we said you pay Azure for your infrastructure and then we'll supply the software? Or would you rather, as a customer, turnkey it and have the whole thing in one package?
That's a very interesting question. I think as a large enterprise who may have individually negotiated deals with Azure or AWS, whoever, we would prefer to see a software cost, because then we could leverage our own internal purchasing power with the hardware side of things. However, I could see if I was a smaller SME, but having that pure transparency, the price you quote, it includes it all. So you'd almost want two prices, George. You'd want bring your own hardware, and that could bring your own Azure or bring your own instances, or there is an all-in-one cost. This is the software and the hardware cost. I think that's where you're going to have to be, certainly if you're targeting large enterprises, because they'll all have bespoke deals with the large cloud vendors.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think that particular point sort of is answered by the fact that when we looked at this, I think I said I picked off the one of Pure's cloud block storage solution. So just using that one as an example, you can do that where you bring your own license, or you can have an all-inclusive price. The bring your own license means you can take some of your license from your existing on-premises equipment and use that terabyte license on the cloud, which to me is a real ripoff, because it's the same price. So you've already got that hardware on-prem for free, and you're having to pay the extra cost of the virtual instances, but you get to use the same license? That doesn't seem to be fair. So I think customers will be savvy enough to pick out those sort of little, you know, gotchas. And I know that, you know, we all look at that sort of thing. So whenever you're trying to work out your pricing, George, you're going to have to be careful you don't create some sort of loop like that where people look at it and go, hang on, that doesn't make sense. Because that just cuts out potentially people buying a product in a certain way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a kind of an interesting, you know, pricing. You could do a whole just on establishing pricing. You could do a whole podcast on, right? But we're toying with there's a bunch of different things we're looking at. One is, since we already charge for capacity on-prem, let's say you just wanted to replicate just some specific applications to the cloud from a DR type of perspective. What if we just extended that capacity, or let's say you had enough capacity? There would be no charge to go to the cloud with that, other than the infrastructure cost, right? So I think there's a right way to do it, and figuring that out is our next big step.
Yeah, I think that sort of brings us to a very interesting conclusion, because what it says, George, is what we started this conversation out with at the very beginning, and that is what people want is transparency. So it's transparency by knowing what they're going to pay, and it's also transparency in working out how the costs break down, so that when you are working out what you might be using and how you might consume it, you can at least understand what your charging cost is likely to be and how you can best use it. So I think there's a combination here of both pricing, to be honest about being upfront and not giving you a hotel door price, and pricing in terms of showing you how it breaks down so you can make the best choice.
I totally agree.
Excellent. Well, on that note, if we're all agreed, that's probably the perfect time to call a halt.
Indeed.
I think that's absolutely. George, thank you very much again for taking part. So just tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find StoreOne.
So I'm on I'm on Twitter at George A. Crump. I got to get better at checking that more often now that I think about it. But primarily storeone.com. That's storeone.com. And we've got blogs and resources and everything you need right there.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, guys. And look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.